Users of the online video platform YouTube reportedly post some 100 hours of video content each minute. Much of that video content is very basic video narratives, people sharing their own experiences with the world. Researchers at Dartmouth have been looking at whether there are benefits for people with severe mental illness who post their narratives on YouTube. John Naslund is a PhD student in health policy at the Dartmouth Institute for Health Policy and Clinical Practice and lead author of the research article published in the journal PLOS ONE. Welcome.
Hi, Brady.
The article notes that people with severe mental illness appear to share their personal stories online more often than people without mental illness. And yet, there's a cultural perception that mental illness is largely hidden, not discussed as often as it perhaps should be. Do we know why individuals are using these platforms?
What we saw, this was a form of naturally occurring peer support, which we know in people with severe mental illness, peer support is something that's known to be highly beneficial. When people have a highly stigmatized illness, they can feel highly isolated and alone with their symptoms and their experiences. And I think just being able to find a wider community is something that not only is highly beneficial, but something that many of these individuals look for. And I think social media is a place where they can find that.
And what's particularly interesting about the choice of YouTube as the place to look for that community, it's a video site. It's not like Facebook or Twitter where text is the primary medium. And there are many sites where you can stay anonymous, but you're putting your actual self right out there on YouTube. People can see and hear you.
Oh, yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, with YouTube, it actually there's different degrees of disclosure, and that I think that's a way for people to sort of decide what level of risk they feel comfortable with sharing their personal illness stories. For sure, you have people who post videos and are fully open, but then you also have people who comment that maybe use a username and then don't have to share those type of personal details, but can still obtain some of the similar benefits and interact with others with similar experiences. So you can see there's kind of a range of how many details you can choose to share.
That's particularly interesting given that the perception of commenters on YouTube is that they are unusually hostile and negative compared to even other social media sites.
Yes, and I'm really glad you raised that point because when we were working on putting together the study, my colleagues and I, several of our advisors challenging us, being like, well, you really need to look for the risks. You really need to consider the risks. And the vast majority of the comments were highly positive, which was really surprising to us. We coded over 3,000 comments, and only about 5% were actually negative. And what was most surprising is that even when there were negative comments, other posters would come to the defense of that person saying, you know, you don't know anything about his experiences, you know, stay out of here, keep your negative comments to yourself. We hypothesize that that's probably because these are personal stories. They're really, you sort of have to be looking for these type of videos and this type of content in order to find it. And we believe that that screens out maybe a lot of that kind of nastiness that happens on YouTube.
Going forward, what questions would you hope to answer with this kind of research and this platform?
To us, what was so fascinating is that this is just naturally occurring. This is just happening out there. Understanding sort of the motivation as to why individuals are doing that is one of our next steps that we're really keen to pursue. So actually trying to interview some of the video posters and maybe some of the people who post comments to find out why they find that beneficial, what they hope to get out of it. And then trying to look, I guess, down in the future is how could this be combined with formal clinical services? Because maybe I think there's definitely benefits here that might not be offered in a traditional systems, and trying to find a way to maybe pair the two.
John Naslund, thanks so much for your time today.
Great. Thanks so much, Brady.